Hi, everybody. This is Gary Sandy, and thank you very much for listening to the WKRP cast.
Hey, fellow babies.
It's Alan and Donna.
The WKRP family lost a dear member this last week. Frank Woodrow Bors Jr., better known as Frank Bonner, passed away on Wednesday, June 16th of 2021.
While we normally don't mention dated events, we felt it was important to recognize the passing of Frank Bonner. Frank's portrayal of unforgettable sales icon Herb Tarlick was a gift we've all enjoyed as fans.
Although he was probably best known for Herb, Frank had an extensive career as both an actor and director.
It's true. We've never personally met any of the actors who portray the main cast of WKRP. But since the start of this podcast, we feel like we've become very close to all of them. Thankfully for us, Frank lives on through his portrayal of Herb.
We take it for granted anymore, but technology has only allowed us to capture and preserve both the audio and video of performances for about 100 years. We're glad DVD and digital technology allows us to continue to enjoy the work Frank did during those four laugh-filled seasons of WKRP.
We considered doing a special episode dedicated to Herb when we realized we had two coming up. Both this episode, Herb's Dad, and next week's Put Up or Shut Up are outstanding showcases for Frank Bonner's talent. Both episodes are very Herb-focused. There are plenty of laughs, but we also get some deep and emotional performances in each.
So while we mourn the passing of Frank Bonner and offer our deepest condolences to his family, let's also celebrate the fact that Herb Tarlick will live on forever to his many fans.
I think we can come up with something here. How about this? Music comes up. Hoorah, hoorah. Hoorah, hoorah.
I don't want that. I want something light and bouncy.
Okay, how about hoorah, hoorah.
That's better.
So just sit right down, relax, open your ears real wide and say...
Weather today in the greater Cincinnati area.
Are you awake? Whoa! Are you awake now?
But the senator, while insisting he was not intoxicated, could not explain his nudity.
Say what?
Dear God, she's going to kill us all.
Welcome to the WKRP cast. My name is Donna Stair.
And I'm her husband, Alan. This is a week-by-week, episode-by-episode rewatch. We're getting into the music,
the trivia,
and the fun of WKRP.
So, fellow babies, don't touch that dial. It's time for the WKRP cast.
I'm at WKRP in Cincinnati.
Welcome back to another WKRP cast. We're going to meet more family this week. Donna, what is our episode?
This week we're talking about Herb's Dad. It aired the 14th of January, 1980, written by P.J. Turakvi and Stephen Campman. Story editors were Dan Gunselman, Steve Marshall, Stephen Campman, and P.J. Turakvi. Executive story consultant, Blake Hunter, and it was directed by Rod Daniel. Herb's father visits the station to see his son. Herb Sr. is a born salesman, just like Herb Jr., and he's run away from the retirement home where he was living. Herb Sr. wants his son to give him money so he can go to California.
The background story on this episode is almost as interesting as the episode itself. Our guest star, who we'll meet in a bit, is Burt Parks, longtime host of the Miss America pageant. The Miss America pageant in 1979 was held in September. Burt hosted, same as he had the previous 23 years. He sang There She Is, like he always did. That fall, he had several projects lined up, along with an end-of-year vacation.
This episode was shot the week of December 17th. Taping night was December 21st. After he wrapped WKRP, Burt and his wife had 2 weeks of vacation planned over the holidays. They were scheduled to arrive back at their home in Connecticut on January 4th of 1980.
Burt was not only celebrating Christmas and New Year's with family, he was also celebrating his birthday. He turned 65 on December 30th. Unfortunately, the producers at the Miss America pageant had an unpleasant surprise planned for him. It was the start of a new decade. Parks had hit retirement age, and he was just about to complete 25 years as host. The pageant producers decided it was time for someone younger to take the helm.
The announcement was made January 4th, and it was handled as poorly as possible. Burt Parks heard about it, along with the rest of the world, from an Associated Press radio announcer as he was heading home on the final day of his vacation. He spent the day on January 5th of 1980 fielding phone calls in a daze.
Now, here was Hugh Wilson sitting on an In the Can episode with Burt Parks, who was suddenly all over the news. What to do? How about get it on the air as fast as possible? The air date of this episode was pushed up by more than a month. In America's favorite radio station, Frank Bonner says the whole thing was enough to give you chills. It was almost prophetic. The episode is about a guy not wanting to retire, and suddenly here's Burt Parks being put out to pasture by the Miss America folks. It was just one of those things, but Bonner said they all felt guilty and were thinking, we didn't mean to do it, Bert.
Well, let's get into the episode. We start out in the lobby. Jennifer's at her desk reading the Wall Street Journal when Johnny comes through the door from the bullpen. He sees Jennifer with her back to him. He scans the lobby, sees it's empty, and he decides to back up and make another entrance. He leaps through the doorway as if he is dancing in a ballet. He dances up behind Jennifer, who is still reading the newspaper and has not even glanced his way.
You look very silly.
Well, you look very sexy.
Placing his pointer finger on Jennifer's desk, Johnny poses a question to Jennifer.
How about it, Jennifer? What do you say? You and me, here, now.
Jennifer asks him what they are talking about, and Johnny tells her he's talking about dancing. He's always wanted to dance with her.
Yeah, dancing? I think dancing was the fallback there when he said right here. I think he had to come up with dancing.
Here, now.
So Jennifer is reading the Wall Street Journal, the largest daily newspaper in the United States by circulation. They have a daily readership of 2.84 million as of 2019. The paper was founded in New York City in 1889 by Charles Dow and Edward Jones.
Jennifer tells Johnny that he's in a good mood, and then she asks what's wrong.
Just glad to be heterosexual.
Jennifer looks up at him confused. Well, Johnny tells her he can't explain it. It just feels good.
There's something in the coffee this morning. So Art arrives to work telling them both good morning.
Hi, Izzy. Feel like dancing?
Art looks at Jennifer and asks, what's wrong with Johnny?
Oh, nothing. He just is glad to be a man and he feels good.
Art says that's good and heads to his office. He doesn't really understand. He doesn't care. He just wants to get out of there. Johnny hops in front of him doing a dance step from side to side, making it impossible for Art to get around him. Johnny tells Carlson he leads beautifully.
If you're not dancing, pal, I'm leaving.
As Johnny leaves, heading back to the studio, he hits Art on the rear and really smacks him. Art looks at him with his mouth open, shocked.
You're sorry now, right? Listen, you two. Tomorrow, nude wrestling. Art, be ready.
And with that, Johnny heads back to the studio.
Mr. Carlson, trying to recover from what has just happened, asks Jennifer if there's any mail. She tells him no.
But your toy airplanes came this morning.
Mr. Carlson corrects her.
Model, Jennifer. Model, not toy.
Jennifer tells him she's lined them all up for him on his desk. She also tells him Andy wants to see him.
Well, wait an hour and then let him in.
He hurries into his office excited about his toy, model airplanes.
Yeah, that's the difference between dolls and action figures. An older gentleman walks into the lobby. He walks right up to Jennifer's desk and looks at her with a big grin. This guy just looks sleazy. Jennifer asks if she can help him.
I think you have already, gorgeous. The question is, can I help you? What's your name?
Jennifer Marlowe, and no, you can't.
What a line. He asks Jennifer if she wants to buy a toaster. Jennifer says no. He tells her forget about toasters. They're a bore.
It's the lessons in life that count.
Jennifer asks him again, is there something she can do for him?
I wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole.
And That right there was my nomination for line of the episode. We got a better one, but that was a good line. Jennifer tells him if he wants to see Art, he won't be in for an hour or more.
The man says he wants to be totally honest with her. She asks him what's he selling.
Zuni Indian jewelry. Everybody loves it.
The Zuni are a Native American Pueblo people who live in the Zuni River Valley. Modern Zuni are a federally recognized tribe. Most live in the reservation called the Pueblo of Zuni on the Zuni River, a tributary of the Little Colorado River in western New Mexico.
The Zuni really are skilled metalsmiths and jewelry makers. They use copper, brass, and silver, along with jade, turquoise, and gemstones to craft their jewelry. The Zuni still make and sell their handmade Zuni fetishes. About 10,000 Zuni live on the reservation, and it's estimated that up to 75% of all Zuni income is derived from the sale of Zuni handmade jewelry.
Jennifer tells the man that she doesn't think Mr. Carlson would be interested.
Okay, fine.
Jennifer pauses. She looks up from her newspaper. Her eyes are wide. There's something familiar about this man and a little alarming.
Don't listen to me, Jenny Poo.
Jenny Poo.
I've only been in sales all my life.
Oh, no. No, wait. You're not. I mean, you're not. You couldn't be.
You've got it. Herbert R. Tarlac, Sr. At your service.
He bows before her.
I love how her radar went off. She sensed that before he introduced himself. Herbert R. Tarlac Sr. is being played by Bert Parks, who was born Bertram Jacobson in 1914. Bert is an old school entertainer who has done it all. He was an actor, singer, host, and announcer for both radio and TV.
He started on Atlanta radio at 16 years old. By 19, he was the singer and straight man on the Eddie Cantor Show.
He would go on to host the game shows Break the Bank from 1945 until 57 and Stop the Music, which he did for a year on radio in 1948, then took to TV from 49 to 52.
Bert had every man's dream job from 1955 to 1979 as the host of the annual Miss America pageant. As the new Miss America was being crowned, Bert would sing, "There She Is, Miss America."
Oh, there she is, Miss America.
As we mentioned, this appearance on WKRP unintentionally coincided with Bert's firing from the pageant. The episode was written and shot before he was fired and aired right after. And that's our cold open. Here comes our theme song.
WKRP in Cincinnati.
Before we get back into the episode, we need to talk about the sound. If you're listening along with us on the Shout Factory discs, you might feel like something sounds weird. You would be right. As far as we can tell, the episode that wound up on the Shout Factory DVDs has not been completely sweetened or mixed for audio. It's most noticeable around the jokes. There are laughs, but they are distant and minimal. What you're hearing is the no audience Friday performance.
Even when they did the taping without an audience, there would still be anywhere from 30 to 50 people in the studio. Some were working, like running the camera or holding a boom. Others were script and office people, gophers, and reps from the production company who would sit in on the taping. You can hear them laugh, but they aren't mic'd, so it sounds thin and distant in some spots.
What aired and what went into syndication has the laughs. We've compared the Shout Factory version to Dale Kovar's edit and various streaming versions we've found online. And as far as we can tell, only Shout Factory's version is not fully sweetened with all the laughs. It is very apparent in some of the scenes. Okay, we just wanted to mention that. Now let's get into the episode.
We head to the bullpen where we see Herb and Les, and oh man,
it's time!
Herb Tarlac, fashion alert.
Pink dress shirt, red and white checked jacket with matching red and white checked pants, red tie with white polka dots, white belt, and white shoes.
Herb is counting money and Les is shaking his head at him.
It's illegal, Herb.
It's free enterprise, Les. I raffle off my paycheck to my fellow workers here in the building, and for a minimal investment, they get a chance to pick up a fast buck. And for minimal effort, I get a chance to pick up 1,000 tax-free dollars.
And now a special look at this episode's bandage placement for the 5-time Buckeye NewsHawk Award winner, Les Nessman. This is the Les Nessman Bandage Report. Now, here's Donna Stair with her report about Les Nessman.
Right side of neck.
This has been a look at the bandage placement for Silver Sow and Copper Cob award-winning journalist Les Nessman.
Herb kisses the stack of bills he's holding in his hand. Les tells him it's wrong.
It's American.
He asks if it's wrong to provide for your family and give them the things they need. Looking disgusted, Les leaves, heading back to the studio.
Herb is running a flim-building lottery to pump up his paycheck. Now, let's run the numbers real fast. We know Jennifer is the highest paid at the station, making $24,000 a year. Let's say Herb is making $18,000. His two-week paycheck would be about $750 before taxes. He's giving himself a $250 raise by running the raffle. It seems like a lot of work for a 33% raise. He probably should have used the time that he put into the raffle to go out and sell some new clients. Oh, and don't get any ideas. What he's doing is very illegal.
Herb starts to kiss the stack of money again when the door from the hallway opens and Andy comes in. Herb quickly hides the cash in his top desk drawer. Andy is not happy. He tells Herb he was
listening to Johnny not playing the songs that I picked out for him. When suddenly on the air comes a commercial for Shady Hills Rest. The one that goes, you ever wondered what would happen when you can no longer feed yourself? You know the one I'm talking about.
Andy, I'm so glad
we specifically agreed they were not the kind of clients that we wanted, Herb.
You're right.
See, their ads are tasteless and the company is disreputable.
Wait a minute.
I love that. Play this, not play the songs I picked out for him. I like that. Shady Hills is a holdover from the previous format. We got to hear their oh-so-classy spots on the air back in pilot part one.
Shady Hills, Cincinnati's finest rest home. Many people ask this age-old question, what happens when I can no longer feed myself?
Tells Andy he knows the Shady Hills people personally. They provide decent services at reasonable rates. Andy wants the ads off the air.
Herb says he knows the ads are tasteless.
In advertising, tasteless works.
And I thought that was a good line of the episode too, but that's not the one we've settled on. I like how we get a shot showing off a lot of Herb's suit when he says the word tasteless.
And oh, is it?
Andy tells him no, and Herb says he'll rewrite the ads.
Jennifer comes into the bullpen. Andy asks if Art's in. She says not yet, but we know he's in there playing with his airplanes. He tells her to let him know when he gets in. She says sure as she heads to Herb's desk. And oh my goodness, Nipplegate is out the window. Whatever those standards and practices people had a problem with back in the pilot, they've thrown that out completely. Jennifer is at attention, and I'm afraid she's going to poke Herb in the eye with one of those things.
Herb? Yeah, gorgeous.
Your father is in the lobby.
Herb laughs and doesn't believe her.
All right, then there's a man in the lobby with perfect teeth claiming to be your father.
Why would somebody want to do that?
Herb asks Jennifer what he wants. She tells Herb to go ask him. Herb stands up from his desk, laughing.
Oh, Jenny Poo, let's see what you're up to now.
He walks out of the bullpen.
Way too many Jenny Poos getting thrown around already in this episode. We move into Art's office, where Herb Sr. is showing Art his Indian jewelry. Holding up a bracelet, Art asks Herb Sr. what it costs.
How can you put a price on craftsmanship? What do you think it's worth?
Well, he's got those salesman lines down.
Oh, man, does he ever. Art tells him he doesn't know. Herb Sr. says he can tell Art likes that bracelet. He tells Carlson.
That's one the chief made.
Of course it is. And although it hurts, he's going to let Art have it for $20.
Mr. Carlson is thrilled, and he reaches for his billfold.
I must be some kind of a fool, but I'll never forget that you are the one that gave my son a job and nobody else would.
Carlson pulls out a $50 bill, and he asks Herb Sr. if he has any change. Herb Sr. grabs the $50 bill and tells him he doesn't, but he will throw in a little gem for his wife.
She had her nostril pierced yet?
No.
Cheapest little gem here. You know what that used to be? That used to be a living insect on the desert. Now it's an antique. Now you take this, I'll keep the 50, and you call me crazy.
You know, Carmen Carlson doesn't appear to me to be the nostril-piercing type.
Yeah, she's a lot of fun and all, but I don't see her with a pierced nostril. You can really hear the differences between the sweetened and unsweetened versions in this scene. Check it out. Here's Herb Sr. making the pitch with laughs.
That's one the chief made until it hurts. I'm going to let you have that for $20.
Just sold, by golly.
Well, I must be some kind of a fool, but I'll never forget that you're the one that gave my son a job when nobody else would.
Oh, well. Hey, listen, you got change for 50.
No, I'm afraid I don't. But no. Aren't I throwing a little gem for your wife? She had her nostril pierced yet?
No.
Now, that same set of lines without the laughs.
That's one the chief made. Oh, yeah. Boy, I'm telling you, it hurts. I'm going to let you have that for $20.
Just sold, by golly.
No, I must be some kind of a fool, but I'll never forget that you're the one that gave my son a job when nobody else would.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
Hey, listen, you got change for 50.
No, I'm afraid I don't, but look. Aren't I throwing a little gem for your wife? She had her nostril pierced yet?
No.
Really changes it.
Now, in this scene, Bailey enters the lobby and goes to the coffee machine. Herb, in all of his red and white checked glory, enters the lobby with Jennifer. Looking around, he asks Jennifer where his father is. Well, Bailey wants to meet him.
No, he's not here.
The door to Carlson's office opens, and Herb Sr. comes out.
Hi, son.
Herb looks shocked.
Those shoes? Oh, they really work for me, and that suit. Well, what can I say?
Herb, still dazed, asks his dad what he's doing here. Dad says he wanted to meet Herb's friends and see where he worked.
Should I be shot for that? You want to kill your father for that?
Herb is wanting to get his dad out of the station. He asks his dad if they can go someplace and have a cup of coffee. Herb Sr. is distracted by Bailey. He heads over to talk with her. He asks who she is.
Bailey Quarters.
Bailey Quarters, I should have known. You know, my son speaks about you all the time.
He does?
No, he doesn't, but he should. My son is a little bit of a jerk.
Senior is unstoppable. He pivots from Bailey to Jennifer.
Of course, I know Jennifer. But no.
Not as well as I'd like to, but, well, that's life. Well, I wish I was a little younger.
Oh, no. Don't say that. You're not old, Mr. Charlie.
Like father, like son, Herb Sr. making his move on Jennifer, asking her out for a little drink.
Perhaps we could have a talk sometime, maybe a little drink, you know. Maybe we could live together, kind of a casual relationship.
That escalated fast, didn't it? Went from a drink to moving in together.
Andy enters the lobby with Les. Herb Sr. is excited to meet more of Herb's friends, even though they aren't girls. Andy introduces himself.
How do you do, sir? I'm Andy Travis.
Oh, Andy Travis. You're the one that's making life tough for my boy.
Herb is so embarrassed, and he puts his hand over his face. His dad tells Andy that he's come up with some great changes, and then he quietly asks Herb if that's the one. Herb asks his dad to shut up, please.
Les sticks out his hand and introduces himself.
Les! Yes, of course. Les, see a psychiatrist, really. It's worth the money.
Herb tells his dad they're busy. Herb Sr. says he understands. He just wanted to drop by and say hello. And right at that moment, Art comes out of his office holding the Zuni bracelet he just bought.
Mr. Charlie, what Indian tribes live in Japan?
Herb Sr. tells Art he can have the entire collection at no extra cost. And as far as we can tell, no Zuni tribes people are located in Japan.
These people are not Spanish.
Herb asks Carlson if he and his father can use his office for a bit. Carlson tells him sure. Andy gets Carlson's attention. He needs to talk to him about the Shady Hills rest home commercials. Well, this gets Senior's attention.
Shady Hills? I mean, Sleazy Hills. That place is a dump. It's full of old people.
Andy looks at Herb's dad and asks if he knows about Shady Hills.
Intimately.
Oh, now it all makes sense.
It sounds like Herb is running a trade-out deal. Dad gets a room at Shady Hills. They get to run their tasteless spots on the station.
Herb can't get his dad into Carlson's office fast enough.
Dad, could we talk?
Herb ushers his dad into the office. Suddenly, everybody has someone they need to talk to.
Carlson, can we talk?
Oh, of course, Andy.
Les, can we talk?
Jennifer is left alone in the lobby and goes back to her Wall Street Journal.
Les comes back into the lobby a bit hesitant.
Jennifer, I'd like for us to talk. But I don't have anything to say right now, so I guess I'll leave.
Okie dokie, Les. I like a man of few words.
Jennifer smiles, winks at Les, and clicks her tongue. Les stands for a bit, staring, looking frightened. And then, at a loss for words, he leaves, scratching his head.
And then that's the end of the scene. And this exchange between Les and Jennifer is a restored scene. This entire scene from just before Les returns to the lobby was cut for the syndication version of this episode. It was necessary to shorten each episode by about 2.5 minutes to make room for commercials. These are the kinds of scenes that got the axe.
Yeah, I don't think the story lost anything by losing that little exchange there.
It didn't. It's just a fun little capper button joke that they did there that has nothing to do with advancing the story, and it got hacked. Nobody saw it for about 30 years.
We come back and we're in Carlson's office where Herb and his dad are talking. Herb Sr. asks his son if this is where he works, and Herb tells him yes. His dad looks impressed and asks if he has an office like this.
Yeah, basically.
Herb Sr. asks how the grandchildren are. Herb tells him they're good.
How's Elaine?
Lucille.
Oh, yeah.
Herb Sr. sits in Carlson's chair.
Herb asks his dad again, why is he here?
I mean, shouldn't you be at the home with your new friends?
One word. Mucho boredom.
Herb Sr.'s command of Spanish seems to be about as good as Herb's. Herb begins pacing around the office telling his dad they've been through all this before. His dad tells him he's not going back there.
We made a deal with Shady Hills. You say you're 70, I run the ads, and they provide you with a very nice place to stay. And at a real bargain. Now, I pulled just about every string I had to put you in there.
Herb Sr. says he thought he was ready to retire, but he's not. And wow, imagine that being Burt Park saying those words.
Mm-hmm.
Herb tells him he's going to go get the car.
Reclining bucket seats, fine print in leather.
Don't you sweet talk me, boy.
Hey, it sounds like Herb got the Cordoba.
Cordoba for me.
I like the way he and his dad speak the same language.
Yes,
they know
they
what
do.
Works on each other. Herb paces a bit more, then he approaches his dad again.
Pop?
Yeah.
Now look, Mom has been gone 3 years. Now you won't live with us. And I can't afford an apartment for you.
His dad says he should have stayed in Vegas.
Why? You blew just about every dime you had on that waitress.
Herb Sr. gets a faraway look in his eyes.
Oh, yeah.
He's a mess. That guy's trouble. Herb tells his dad he's going back to Shady Hills today. His father tells him there's been some woman trouble out there.
Kimberly Sue Cronkite.
Oh, good God.
Herb Sr. says he was trying to calm Kimberly down in a room after dark. Herb Sr. asks Herb if he's got the picture. Wink, wink. Herb nods his head and says he'll fix it.
Now, look, there's no fun there, son. You can't even raffle off your Social Security check, but son, I got a plan.
Herb Sr. wants to head for California. He just needs to get some cash together. Herb tells his dad everyone is nuts in California. He's going back to Shady Hills. And geography check, Frank Bonner is saying this while they are all in California. Herb picks up the phone and Herb Sr. stops him. Herb says this better be important.
I'm dying.
Ooh, Herb hangs up the phone and moves towards his dad like he's gonna hug him.
I'm kidding.
Wow, Herb tells his dad, that's not funny. Herb Sr. says it was just a joke.
That's your idea of a joke?
Why, sure it was. I'm just trying to break the tension, that's all.
Herb is pacing, becoming angry, and then Herb Sr. gets serious again.
I am dying.
Herb looks at his dad. Herb Sr. has a very grim look on his face. He looks at Herb and then down at the desk. Herb gets down on his knees so that he can be face to face with his dad.
What?
You're born second, son. Got you again.
And this explains a lot about why Herb is the way he is, doesn't it?
I think so. Man, that was harsh. Harsh. We transition to the lobby where Jennifer is at her desk reading a very thick and important-looking hardcover book. Herb enters and asks if she's seen his dad.
You gonna make him go back to that place?
Herb says he's going back this afternoon. Jennifer asks if his dad knows yet, and obviously Herb Sr. has been working the station while Herb was gone. Herb tells her not yet. Herb says he knows what she's thinking.
You're thinking that I'm an insensitive, heartless, cruel son who wants to make his life easier by putting his old man away.
Jennifer backs down a bit and says it's none of her business.
You know, Jenny, it's real easy for you to sit there in judgment, thinking that I haven't quite
resolved all my conflicts with Dad yet, you know? That he's the great man. And that I never quite measured up to his impossible standard of excellence. Well, you're wrong.
Herb starts to leave, then he comes back.
Just remember, when you're messing with me, Blondie, you're playing hardball.
Nice to see such a good, healthy father-son relationship.
Thank you.
And that whole "he knows what she's thinking" line that Herb goes into, that's just Herb psychoanalyzing himself, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, too.
We move to the bullpen where Bailey and Les are located. When Herb opens the door, he asks Bailey if she's seen his dad. Bailey has the same question as Jennifer.
You gonna send him back to that place?
Yes, as soon as I find him.
No, I haven't seen him.
Herb tells Bailey he knows what she's thinking. Bailey tells him that it's none of her business.
It's not gonna work because I don't feel guilty.
Then Les speaks up.
I think you're doing the right thing.
Herb looks at Les.
You do?
Yes. I've often thought about putting Mother into a home.
And that brings us to
the line of the episode.
Her apartment seems so large now. What with her getting smaller all the time.
Yep, that was my pick. And yes, Les is reading another edition of the Mahaska Pork News, which we've mentioned before.
I love that line so much. And he's so serious and sincere when he says it, but it's so funny. We move into the studio where Johnny is on the air still.
All right, this is still Johnny Fever, still here. Consulting physician on the case for Rex Earhart, who will be back in his regular time slot, babies, just as soon as he explains to that judge what he was doing with that chicken. But in the meantime, this is the Rockin' Doctor on a roll on the mighty KRP, where it's 3:23 and flashing passion from out of the past, Little Richard.
Johnny goes into Lucille by Little Richard.
Lucille!
Lucille is a 1957 song written by Albert Collins and Little Richard. Little Richard's original version went to number one on the Hot 100. Lucille has been recorded by dozens of artists, including versions by the Everly Brothers, the Hollies, and the Beatles. Waylon Jennings had a number one country hit in 1983 with his version of Lucille.
Hey, Johnny mentioned an air personality that we don't know. He says he's filling in for Rex Earhart, your regular midday host. We knew there had to be other people working here.
Venus is sitting on a desk, and Herb Sr. is looking through albums over in the corner. Venus unfolds a $5 bill.
So, how do we play this liar's poker again?
Well, you see the registration numbers on that bill? You play it just like a poker hand, that's all.
Johnny asks if you can bluff. Herb Sr. says, of course, that's the name of the game.
If you think I'm lying, you call my bluff, but you better be right or I'll take your money, boy.
Okay.
So, liar's poker gets underway.
Two sixes.
3 8s.
Boy, it's just like a pipe dream. I'd gone to California starting a whole new life.
Everybody wants freedom. 4 6s. 4 8s. Any signs of senility?
It's all around, Venus.
I'm Venus.
Who's he?
That's Johnny.
The black guy?
No, I'm the black guy.
Oh, excuse me. 6 9s.
You're bluffing.
6 9s. There it is.
I gotta see that.
6 9s, there you go. 6 9s.
Herb Sr. takes their money, leaving Johnny and Venus stunned.
All right, let's talk liar's poker for a minute. It's played using the serial number of any bill. Normally, you go bill for bill. If you're playing with a one, everybody else is playing with a one. Venus, Johnny, and Herb Sr. seem to be playing with fives.
You bet by claiming you have a certain hand. You might be lying. You might be telling the truth. Claiming hands continues around the group until somebody calls. Whoever has the best poker hand out of the group wins the other player's bills.
Regular liar's poker players are always checking serial numbers on new bills, looking for good hands. You don't spend the good ones. A bill with 6 9s on it would be one to hold on to. Although it's a good hand, nines can be beat. Some versions of the game use the one as an ace.
And we have new posters on the studio door to check out. Starting at the top, you see a man dressed all in white standing in a beautiful southwestern setting. This is a promo poster for Jim Messina's 1979 Oasis album.
This is the legendary Jim Messina of Buffalo Springfield, Poco, and most recently, Loggins and Messina. This album didn't sound like his previous work. Messina had become interested in Latin jazz with a rock edge.
When I look in your eyes, I see the smile I've known, and the love has grown. Why?
That definitely does not sound like his earlier work, and it didn't sell well. Thanks to Michael Hernandez, the account of Rock, for identifying the Jim Messina album.
Below Messina is a promo poster for The Beat. This is their debut self-titled album released in September of 1979.
I went down to check out the local disco show. I saw the people dancing on the floor. I wish there was an easier way. Hey, hey.
Beat was an LA-based power pop group founded in 1979 by Paul Collins. The Beat was the successor to Collins' 70s-era band, The Nerves. All the songs on this album were written by Collins, with one interesting note. Eddie Money has a co-writing credit. The album was critically well-received, but a commercial failure.
That banner across the Beat poster is for the Jefferson Starship album, Freedom at Point Zero. We'll hear more about that one in just a bit.
Hernandez also identified a weird one for us. If you look through the window to the poster on the door of the production room, there's a guy in suspenders with his shirt off. It's Prince.
Thanks, Hernandez, because we could not figure
that out. We could not figure that one out. Thank you, Accountant of Rock.
And now we're in the hallway outside of the studio. Herb comes down the hallway, and he sees that his dad is in the studio. He starts to go in when Andy and Mr. Carlson come out of the bullpen door. They want to talk to him. Herb tells him he is busy with personal problems, but Mr. Carlson confronts him.
Now somebody in this station is running a numbers racket off their paycheck, and all the evidence points to you.
Herb asks, what evidence? Andy shows him the circular that Herb posted in the lobby with the question, want to earn some easy money? Across the top. Carlson said that people are ready to complain to the police about it.
Herb wads up the flyer.
Even if it was me, and I'm not saying that it was, I wouldn't do it again. But clearly, Free Enterprise is dead.
Andy then tells Herb the Shady Hills commercials are going off the air. He asks for support from Mr. Carlson on this. Art agrees.
You know, I've only been in sales all my life. Don't listen to me. I'm just dirt.
Andy and Carlson leave. We've got new posters in the hallway. They're just to Art's right.
The lower poster is a promo for the Pat Metheny Group's American Garage album. The Pat Metheny Group is a jazz fusion band that formed in Lee Summit, Missouri in 1977. This is their second studio album, released in June of 1979. The entire album only has 5 cuts on it, but one of them is the 13-minute long track called The Epic.
The top poster, the one that keeps distracting Art, is the cover of the Cars album Candy O. This is the Cars' second studio album, released in June of 1979. It features the single Let's Go, which hit number 14 on the Hot 100.
I don't want to hold her down.
Cover art that caught Art's eye was painted by Alberto Vargas. Vargas was 83 and retired at the time. He had become famous doing paintings of pinup girls for Esquire and Playboy in the 1950s and 60s. Cars drummer David Robinson had the idea to use Vargas to paint their cover.
This painting features 32-year-old model Candy Moore sprawled across a Ferrari during a 1979 shoot at an L.A. dealership. Candy had played Lucille Ball's on-screen daughter in The Lucy Show, and after the photo shoot, she briefly dated Cars drummer Robinson.
Herb Sr. comes out of the studio and looks out the hallway window. Herb tells his dad he's been looking for him. Herb Sr. points out the window at the Ohio River.
Well, I've been sold down that river.
Herb and his dad go into the bullpen.
I was a little surprised to hear Herb Sr. use the phrase sold down the river, especially when talking about the Ohio River. Nowadays, the phrase means to be cut out of a deal or taken advantage of, but sold down the river is a term that came from slavery in the United States. It specifically referred to the auctions in Louisville, Kentucky, just down the Ohio River from Cincinnati. Slaves sold in Louisville would be put on barges headed for New Orleans, where they would be separated from their families and sold down the river. Slaves referred to the Ohio as the Jordan River because if they could get across it at Louisville and escape into Ohio or Indiana, they would be free.
Herb tells his dad that he's been thinking about Shady Hills. Herb explains that he's fixed things so Herb Sr. can go back.
Boy, you are quite a salesman. I didn't think you could pull that one off.
Herb also tells his dad that he didn't want to put him in there. It looks to me like Herb is getting a little teary-eyed here. His dad tells him he knows, and then he adds, maybe he shouldn't have retired.
Herb says, no, he should have. He's been on the road his entire life.
As a kid, I remember you always being gone.
I always came back.
Herb remembers his dad always bringing him salt and pepper shakers from wherever he'd been.
You collected them?
Still do.
I always found that a little strange, so...
Still bought them for me.
Everybody has to have a collection of something.
So smiling, Herb Sr. reaches into his pockets and he pulls out a set of salt and pepper shakers. These look like whales with their tails in the air. Herb picks them up and looking at them begins to feel even worse about Shady Hills.
Herb sets the salt and pepper shakers down.
Why don't you just come on home and, you know, just stay with us, huh?
His father looks at him and tells him to please not take it the wrong way, but his family makes him nervous. Herb jumps up, asking him what he means.
Now, I love Laura and the kids.
Lucille.
Herb's dad goes on to say that they've been nice to him. He says he hasn't heard from Herb's brother in a long time, but he just hates that Shady Hills place.
I love how they do that so subtly, how he always blows the name.
Yes.
He gets an L in there, but he never gets Lucille right. Herb asks him where else he could go. Well, Herb Sr. mentions California again. He tells Herb he's got connections out there and it's warm.
Old people get cold.
Herb tells his dad he doesn't want him to be alone, and he asks what he's gonna do. His dad begins an explanation.
I have needs.
What are you talking about?
Well,
Come on, what?
A nurse, 33, blonde.
Herb asks his dad if he doesn't think the age range is a little strange. The
difference between young and old is it takes courage to be old.
Herb Sr. tells Herb that they plan to travel together, maybe settle down in California.
Going out to the beach, watch those girls roller skating.
Herb asks his dad if going off with this nurse is the right thing to do.
It's a dreadful mistake. Wake up, boy.
Herb tells his dad it sounds like he's got everything handled. He asks his dad if there's anything he can do.
What?
A little pin money.
How much?
$622.30.
Herb reaches into that drawer and pulls out this stack of bills from the raffle.
How about $1,000 and keep the change?
His dad asks where he got that kind of money. Herb says he just got it.
Boy, you sure learned a few things from your old man, didn't you?
Herb Sr. uses the term pin money. We looked it up. It goes back to the 14th century. Pins were so rare, you know, like the decorative hat pins, that the pin makers were only allowed to sell them on January 1st and 2nd of each year. Court ladies would flock to the depots to buy pins, provided with money from their husbands. As pins became cheaper and more common, ladies spent their money on other fancy items, However, the term pin money stayed in vogue.
Herb asks his dad when they were planning to head out. Senior says they thought today, but there's no rush. Herb looks at his dad and tells him he's good.
What do you mean, son?
I can sell. Me, I can sell. I'm really pretty good.
Senior says it's important to you to be good, isn't it?
You betcha.
His dad gives him a piece of advice.
You better be good or they'll eat you alive.
Really?
No, I'm kidding you.
They both laugh as Herb Sr. heads for the door to leave.
Not that I'm saying I love you, but I love you.
And he walks out the door. Herb sits down at his desk.
Don't mess with him, boy.
Now, we do want to mention, if you're watching along with us on the Shout Factory disc, there's a big difference in the way they end this scene. The Shout Factory disc freezes Herb before he sits. He kind of shoots a cuff on his suit, and then they freeze it and go to the next scene.
It's really clumsy.
It is. It's very clumsy. Whereas in the actual that aired, Herb went to his desk and sat down, and we heard him say that line about don't mess with him. Now, there are so many great stories surrounding this episode. As Bert is exiting, we wanted to drop in a couple more. First, they made the decision, Bert and Frank together, that Herb and his dad wouldn't touch each other and don't embrace. Also, Herb intentionally does not return the I love you right there at the end. They said that would be too easy. You can't make up for a lifetime of being a questionable dad in a single visit.
Frank Bonner also said that this episode was special for him for another reason. In high school in the 50s, Frank was regularly accused of being Burt Parks. He said being called Burt Parks or Burt Parks' son was so common, he started singing There She Is as a joke.
We head to our capper scene in the studio where Johnny is at the mic.
KRP time 220. This is the doctor saying, Rex Earhart, come back. I need you, baby. I can't take this double shift much longer. Now, you can bring the chicken and the judge if you want to. I do not want to be accused of breaking up a relationship.
Venus sitting once again on the desk, and Herb is looking through the albums back over in the same spot where his dad was earlier. Johnny introduces Jefferson Starship and Jane.
Here's the Jefferson Starship with yet another tale of frustrated desire.
Formerly Jefferson Airplane, this comes from their October of 1979 studio album, Freedom at Point Zero. The record company seems to have gone for the full WKRP promotion package. They've also got that promo banner for the album across the beat poster on the studio door. Jane peaked at number 14 on the U.S. Hot 100. And if you're into it, you can also play Jane in the 2015 video game Rock Band 4.
Johnny turns down the volume and they all three pull out bills for another round of Liar's Poker. And would you look at Herb? I think we've got another one. It's time!
Herb Darlick, Fashion Alert.
Chocolate brown suit coat and matching pants with an orange dress shirt. The suit coat has white pockets and white epaulettes on the shoulders. He's wearing a brown tie with white diagonal stripes. The white stripes in the tie and the white on the suit coat really pop. He has on his signature white belt and shoes. And I was thinking, I would love to see this outfit in a black light.
That is weird looking. It is just weird. So Venus asks Herb if he's heard from his dad.
Send us a pair of Wayne Newton salt and pepper shakers.
They continue bidding with their numbers. It's Herb's turn.
Yeah, he doubled his pocket money at blackjack. 6 9s.
Venus and Johnny both call on this.
Yeah, we've heard that hand before.
Herb walks over, pulls out the bill, and shows them. Herb takes their money.
That's the same hand your dad beat me with. Same dollar.
Dad must have given Herb more than salt and pepper shakers. Herb walks out of the studio and we can see him through the window counting his money. Johnny and Venus look at each other, then jump up and run after Herb.
And that's it for the episode. Had a blast meeting Herb's dad. What's up for next week, Donna?
Next week, we'll be discussing Put Up or Shut Up. Herb's wife and kids are out of town for 10 days. Herb thinks that this is the perfect time to finally get Jennifer to go out with him. When Jennifer finds out she must deal with Herb for 10 days, she tells Bailey she can't make it. Bailey offers some advice to Jennifer. When Herb learns what the ladies have planned, he makes his move.
And it's another Herb theme episode. I can't wait. That's going to do it for this episode of the WKRP Cast. If you'd like to watch along with us, make sure to check our show notes. You can find us on social media. Follow our Facebook page at WKRP Cast.
Got a question, comment, or correction? Let us know about it. Write us WKRPcast@gmail.com.
And remember to please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
May the good news be yours.
The WKRP Cast is not endorsed by MTM Enterprises, Shout Factory, or CBS. This podcast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. WKRP in Cincinnati, the WKRP logo, and all names, pictures, and audio of WKRP in Cincinnati characters are registered trademarks of MTM, CBS, Shout Factory, or their respective copyright holders.
Almost forgot, fellow babies. Booger!